These three sentences, three phrases that I have used, give you a description of Plato's personality. Three phrases I have used. First is, he has a large and wide and rich mind. Second, high artistic genius, commanding creative expression. He is supposed to have written the best possible prose in the history of the world, even now remains unsurpassed as far as the beauty of his prose is concerned. So that is his creative ability, his power of creative expression, like an artist. An artist may paint, but also artists can write. Mere painting is not art, mere writing is not an art. Painting becomes an art if dot dot dot. Writing becomes an art if dot dot dot. We have to put a blank, we have to fill up. When painting becomes an art, painting can be only a copy, not a painting. A writing can be a clerical writing of an essay, you just copy out. It's not an art. Painting is an art when you create a form. All painting is nothing but painting of forms, different kinds of forms, shapes, sizes, proportions. So all painting is an art if a right form, a form is created which expresses the meaning that you want to express. Then it becomes an art. An artist has a meaning in his mind which he wants to express. How does he express? By drawing a figure or a form. But that form should be exactly expressive of the meaning that he wants to express. You have seen, for example, a beautiful painting of the Buddha. I don't know if in this Indian culture center if this painting is portrayed. It's a painting of the Buddha. The painting consists of three figures. There is a figure of Buddha. It's a form of Buddha. Then there is a form of Yashodhara, the wife of Buddha, a second form. And there is a figure of the son, young son of Buddha and Yashodhara. These three figures are in the painting. Now you could have put these three figures in any way you like. And the good artist is one who has something to convey to you. Is there a message to be given through the painting? You are not an artist unless you have meaning to convey. Now the artist who has done this great painting, one of the greatest paintings of the world, the painter wants to show first the greatness of the Buddha, surpassing greatness of the Buddha. He wants to show that Buddha is a supreme personality. Now what kind of form will you give to express supreme personality? You know, there are some artists who want to show that Christ is supreme. Now how do they express it? By not showing the face at all. They draw the figure of Christ, but they don't paint the figure of the face at all. Because according to them, the moment you make a figure, you limit it. That which is supreme is limited. So they say, well, you shall not paint the face of Christ. There's one way of showing the supremacy. Now here, this painter has a different approach. He says, alright, I want to show the supremacy of the Buddha. How does he show? If you see the painting, he decides the proportion between Buddha and Yashodhara. As compared to Yashodhara, Buddha surpasses so high that in the painting you have a huge figure of Buddha and a very small, proportionally smaller figure of Yashodhara. This is how he puts justice, the right thing in the right place. That which is so great, the size of Buddha is so high and the size of Yashodhara is so low. But not merely that, there is a gesture of Yashodhara and a gesture of Buddha. Buddha stands like Himalayas, unmoved, immobile, calm, absolutely unruffled. But the gesture of Yashodhara is that of supplication, submission, a tremendous sense of modesty and humility. That's a gesture of Yashodhara to show, I am nothing before this great and huge, massive personality. And this is further strengthened by a third figure of the son, even a smaller figure, in which the mother makes a gesture to show the greatness of the Buddha. It's a gesture which simply, by a gesture, it is so beautifully done that you feel that Yashodhara is explaining the supreme greatness of Buddha and how just as she submits and she's so humble, similarly so he should be so humble in presence of the Buddha. Now this meaning is conveyed merely by the figures, three figures. That is the mark of a creative artist. The meaning is conveyed by forms, by placing them in a particular manner and by gestures of a certain kind. That is the mark of an artist. Now similarly, if you are a writer, then how do you write? An artistic expression. For that you should read Plato. One day we shall read Plato and read his prose writing and see how beautifully he writes and communicates his ideas. Supreme ideas expressed supremely. So that when you read, the greatest mark of writing is that when you read, you must experience. You go beyond concept and begin to experience. That is the mastery of an art of writing. So this is the second quality of Plato. Not only his mind is large and wide and rich, but he has high artistic genius commanding creative expression. And third, an intense dynamic nature expressing itself in concentrated efforts at the realization of a sublime and ideal order of existence on the earth. You may have great ideas and you remain quiet. You may have great ideas and you are dynamized to see that these ideas are realized on the earth. You may be only watching the world. That is one way of being. But you watch the world and change the world. That is another way of being, a greater way of being. Merely to watch the world is quite easy. You can see television all the time. But to change the world order, you find something is wrong, you take out the wrong and plant something new which is beautiful. It's a greater being. Plato was like that. He saw the world to be in a very bad condition. Then he realized what is the ideal order. And he tried his best to see that that ideal order is established. Even if he fails, so what? To make an effort, to make an attempt, that is the greatness. And that is what Plato did. So these three expressions you must remember in your mind to describe Plato. A large and a wide and a rich mind. That's the first description of Plato. The second is the high artistic genius commanding creative expression. Second aspect of him. A mind and creativity. And thirdly, dynamic ability, dynamic effort to realize on the earth a sublime dream, a sublime ideal. These three combination of these three elements makes Plato's personality. In his early youth, we find him planning for a political career. It was only because he found that the then political conditions would not permit him to be useful to the state that he changed his mind. The death of Socrates put a seal on this change and made him decide finally for the life of a professional philosopher. But even then, he did not remain merely an armchair philosopher. He established in Athens an academy for training and imparting to students a comprehensive education, just as we are now doing here, establishing an academy for training and imparting a comprehensive education. So he did in his time. He established an academy. And in due course, this academy became a great center of learning where came students from many parts of the civilized world. It supplied to the Greek states many scholars, statesmen, and individuals of high culture. He laid the foundations of this academy so deep that it lived for hundreds of years until Justinian disestablished it. It is like creating a center of education here, and imagine in future for hundreds and hundreds of years if it can continue to live. That is called the dynamic power of one man who establishes something powerfully, very not easy to disestablish it. It remained alive for years, hundreds of years, until Justinian. Now Justinian is a word, I'll leave it with you. You will do research. You look up the encyclopedias or reference books, and probably tomorrow you can tell me, write down a short note on Justinian. Who was Justinian? Who he was, where he lived, when he lived, what he did, what is he famous for? You answer me this question tomorrow. He was so deeply concerned with the future of humanity that he speculated on the problem of an ideal order of existence and came to the conclusion which is set forth in his Republic. The following paragraph is one of the most famous paragraphs in the history of thought. You should master this paragraph, read again and again, because one of the most important paragraphs in human history. This is what he says. Until philosophers are kings, or the kings and princes of this world have the spirit and power of philosophy, and political greatness and wisdom meet in one, and those commoner natures who pursue either to the exclusion of the other are compelled to stand aside, cities will never have rest from these evils. No, nor the human race, as I believe. And then only will this our state have a possibility of life and behold the light of day. This is one example also of his expression in prose. How beautiful is the prose of Plato, how he describes his great vision. I should read again, since it is very important to do justice to it. We should read thrice, so that in our reading we may say that we have done justice to Plato's great thought. Until philosophers are kings, or the kings and princes of the world have the spirit and power of philosophy, and political greatness and wisdom meet in one, and those commoner natures who pursue either to the exclusion of the other are compelled to stand aside, cities will never have rest from these evils. No, nor the human race, as I believe. Then only will this our state have a possibility of life and behold the light of day. Tomorrow when I come here, I will give you 10 minutes to write a summary of this paragraph. So I will not take time now to explain this paragraph. I will see how much you read or understand, but write the summary of this paragraph. You will have the art of summarizing. To write a summary is one of the best ways of understanding. So this is one exercise I give you, and I'll give you here in my presence. I will see how you summarize this paragraph. If you have questions on this paragraph, you ask me now. For that purpose, I read once again this paragraph, so that you follow it step by step. There are 3 main sentences in this. One is, philosophers should be kings, or kings should become philosophers. These are 2 sentences. And those who are only kings but not philosophers, and those who are philosophers but not kings, they should be set aside. So these are 3 main sentences. Philosophers should become kings, or kings should become philosophers. And those who are only kings but not philosophers, and those who are philosophers but not kings, they should be set aside. They should not be allowed to interfere. Only when this situation is obtained, then only the evils of society can be met. You know, if you read Mother's small write-up called Dream, I don't know if you have seen. Have you seen? A Dream by the mother. There she has said, this is a place where money shall not be the sovereign lord. Right? This is one idea which is very important. Second, a place where students do not study for passing examinations and obtaining certificates. It's a dream. Mother is in search of students who are not seeking to get examinations, they are not afraid of the future. And so, oh, unless I have a certificate, where should I stand in the world? No. Certificate is not a crutch. You are not a lame person. You should be able to stand on your own by the virtue of the knowledge that you possess, wisdom that you possess. This is the dream. And then thirdly, she says, it is a place where there will be only one authority, the authority of truth. These are 3 important statements that Mother has made in this dream. Authority not of any human being, not of this person or that person, but of truth, wherever it may be. A child may be truthful, then the truth which is expressed in the child is a sovereign. It may be a young person, it may be an old person, it makes no difference. What is important is the truth, the authority of the truth. This is the vision that mother has given, is much vision. But this vision also is great, we must be able to admire it. Simply because it is not so great as mother's vision, we should not underestimate it. It is a very important vision. In fact, mother also said somewhere that you should have 7 or 8 individuals of intuitive intelligence. She did not use the word philosophers. She used the word people who have got intuitive intelligence. They should be the guides of this society, of this new society, new world that we are building. It's almost like saying that philosophers should be kings. But philosophers are only conceptual. Whereas those who have intuitive intelligence have got experience. So it's a higher degree than mere philosophers. So mother says not merely philosophers should be kings, but people who have got intuitive intelligence, they should be guides. And guides only when they embody the truth, not otherwise. Authorities of the truth, not even of these intuitive people. So, when a person reaches a very great height, one begins to conceive an ideal order of existence. What should be the ideal society? How people should live? By what they should be guided? To whom they should have allegiance, whom they should submit to. These are the questions which are asked and answered. So, Plato had risen to such a great height that in one sentence he has given his vision. Either philosophers should be kings, or kings should be philosophers, or, and those who are only philosophers but not kings, and those who are kings but not philosophers, they should be set aside. When you obtain this condition in a society, then the light of the day will be seen. Evils of the society can be cured. Right? So tomorrow when you come, you just write down these 3 sentences. I'll be satisfied. Philosophers should be kings, 1 sentence. Or kings should become philosophers, 2nd sentence. And thirdly, those who are only philosophers but not kings, and those who are only kings but not philosophers, are to be set aside. Then this society will be able to remove evils. Alright, this is a summary. I am telling you in advance. So now you remember, and tomorrow the first exercise I'll give you is to give me a summary of this paragraph. Now I read once again. Until philosophers are kings, or the kings and princes of this world have the spirit and power of philosophy, and political greatness and wisdom meet in one, and those commoner natures who pursue either to the exclusion of the other are compelled to stand aside, cities will never have rest from these evils. No, nor the human race, as I believe. And then only will this our state have a possibility of life and behold the light of day. Alright, I think we stop here today, and we shall start with this paragraph tomorrow morning.